Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Weather State Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, today, another great day around these parts. We've got Michael Ferreira John Benest.
John Benest.
The S is a hard S. It's not silent.
It's not John Benet.
No, although you've called him John Benet in the past. You specifically. And I think he's actually,
it's not his first time been asked if it's John Benet or John Benest. It's John Benest, Urban Analytics. Great to have these guys back on the show. Past guests, fan favorites. It's always great to have Michael and John on the show.
Yes. Yeah. Data-driven guys. Talk about good analytics. And they're fresh off their UDI chat. Every year they do like a State of the Union address at UDI. And we basically got them talking about that. Going over the
really
market.
Really going over their slides almost. This is the a lot of this is basically the UDI presentation with us asking questions.
So what kind of information are the people that are shaping the skylines in this city looking for? That's what we're talking about today.
Exactly. And the other nice thing about Michael and John is, you know, we have economists on the show, we have developers on the show, we have marketers on the show,
right?
You know, and a host of others. I would say Michael and John occupy a unique space in this market because not only are they data-driven guys, they work with all the developers.
Right.
So it's like if you want somebody who's got a finger on the pulse of multiple projects across multiple regions in Metro Vancouver, they're the only game in town.
They are. Yeah. No, they are. And they are a celebrated group by the community of developers as well. So we're happy to have them on the show. But before we get to that, Matt, you have a business trip out to K-Town this
weekend. Right.
This
is essential travel to K-Town, if that's what Kelowna is being called. I don't think so. I think Kelowna was rebranded.
That might be a real thing. I'm not sure. I'm going to have to Google that, but I feel like K-Town fits.
Well, here's the exciting thing. I feel like everybody's excited about Kelowna these days, us included. And we just spoke with
John Friesen,
the CEO of Mission Group.
I loved that conversation.
And man.
A lot of people have been actually getting in touch with us about Kelowna and opportunities in Kelowna. Kelowna is like one of the most resilient rental markets. Like it's unbelievable how low the vacancy rate is there. And I've been talking to property managers in Kelowna and they're setting new records week over week in the rents that they're getting.
Well, it just feels like, you know, I remember when we were talking about One Water and projects a couple of years back where it's they're putting a condo tower downtown, like as if like a high rise. And it seemed unique and really interesting. Now it feels like Kelowna's just transforming so quickly.
Right.
And the writing is so clearly on the wall for Kelowna as like this
amazing place.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm excited to head over there. And we do have a two-part series coming up.
We do. Let's talk about that.
One with CEO John
Friesen. Yeah, Mission Group.
From Mission Group, right. That's the largest developer in Kelowna. They're reshaping the skyline. And then we have past guest fan favorite.
Yeah, so actually, it's James Moore. So Ross Soward was on the program before. James Moore is coming on the program.
Oh, I thought it was Ross.
No. James is another long-range planner at the city of Kelowna.
Oh,
he's going to be coming on to talk. So we start off with the developer, the largest developer in Kelowna, or one of the largest developers in Kelowna. And then we talk to the city James Moore about. So what a fantastic episode. If you're interested in Kelowna or considering Kelowna as an investment, this is like the info-packed Kelowna episode. It'll teach you everything you need to know.
That's right. And that's coming up in a few weeks. So stay tuned for that. But before we get to our talk with Michael and John, Adam, there's a few other things. One, we are sponsored this week by Oakland Realty. This is our brokerage, best brokerage in town. head over to oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. And this is, of course, for new agents, aspiring agents, somebody just looking to make a change. And a lot of people are looking to make a change to Oakland right now. If you want to talk to Michael and Morgan and the gang and get a huge incentive, oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. You will not be disappointed. That is for sure. And we thank them for sponsoring the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Our incentive is that we get to keep the lights on.
That's right. We keep the lights on. You get a huge incentive. Right. Oakland really wins. And hey, everybody's happy. What else do we have? Speaking of incentives.
Yeah.
We still have our listing incentive.
We do. We do. Yeah. It is a great time to sell. If you are thinking about selling your home for top dollar in Vancouver, get in touch. If you want to work with the Scalina brothers, we've got an incentive that we're going to be running here for a couple more weeks. Get your house on the market or get your condo on the market. Also, if you have a friend or family member that you want to refer to us, we always want to work with people in the VREP community. So please have them get in touch or make an introduction, and you will get an incentive as well.
Everybody wins.
Everybody wins. But Matt, maybe let's cut to our interview with John and Michael.
John and Michael, this one is a great conversation. Enjoy, everyone.
Okay, so we're here with Michael Ferreira, Managing Principal, and John Benest, Principal at Urban Analytics. How you doing, guys?
Doing great. How are you guys?
Good, good. Yeah, we usually have you guys in the studio, so it's a little bit different having you on over the phone, but great to have you guys back. Fan favorites, past guests, we should say.
Wow, that's high praise.
Can we start maybe with... why don't we start with Michael? I know a lot of our listeners are familiar with you from previous episodes, but can you start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I'm getting older by the year. Every time I do one of these things, I'm another year older. So I think the last time I was on, I was suggesting that I'd been in the industry for 25 years. Now I'm just going to say that I've been in the industry for over 25 years. I've been with Urban Analytics for the better part of the past 25 years. Urban Analytics actually just celebrated its 25th anniversary of its incorporation late in 2020. So that was kind of exciting. And John in the fall of 2020 celebrated his 10th year with Urban Analytics. So we're grizzled veterans of the real estate market here in Vancouver.
This show has the ability of aging guests as well, I think. So and John, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Yeah. Similar to Michael, starting to, not obviously as much so as Michael in terms of industry tenure, but, getting into my sixth year of analyzing the real estate market in Metro Vancouver, been with Michael at Urban Analytics for 10 years. Now we're celebrating our 10th plus anniversary. And prior to that, worked at a variety of Metro Vancouver developers, just analyzing the market and learning everything there is to know about it. Got my feet wet, starting at Polygon in 2005 and another developer, Mosaic. And yeah, just been, now it's kind of going through 3+ cycles of real estate in Metro Vancouver. So I've been enjoying all of it.
Right. Well, no, and it's always good to have you guys on. And we always have you on, or the last couple times we've had you on at the start of the year, kind of after your State of the Union address to the Urban Development Institute. And we love to have you on right after to get your take on what's going on in the market. I believe this year the title of your talk was 2020 is so last year. Is that right?
It was close. 2020 was so last
year. Yeah, Matt, come on.
I'm sorry, guys. I feel like we're running really loose on this show.
Matt has a tough time with present and past.
Yeah, it was bound to happen after just about screwing up UDI.
So. Yeah, exactly. What's going on? The market must be busy if Matt's having this many challenges. So can we maybe start about, let's talk about 2020 was so last year. Can you discuss maybe some of the key takeaways from your address?
Yeah, the title sort of came from the fact that I think there was, we're all fatigued for obvious reasons, but I think, with respect to the market, we were feeling fatigued about, you know, talking about what had happened in 2020 and even for the market itself in 2019. So it was really kind of a reference to, you know, let's put the past behind us and let's look forward, because I think, you know, what's ahead is a lot more promising and provides reason for optimism than what happened in 2020. Now, that being said, we still looked back at 2020 in the presentation to talk about sort of what went on during the year. And, you know, in a lot of ways, it was a pretty remarkable year from what happened in the market versus what the uncertainty that existed a year ago at this time when we were just heading into the pandemic. I guess we're still a few days away from the actual anniversary of going into lockdown, but those first few weeks of the lockdown were just, you know, full of uncertainty, and nobody really knew what was going to happen, how long this was going to last. So we entered the last couple of weeks of March, first few weeks of April, just in a little bit of a sense of paralysis where, you know, all of a sudden everybody was shifting and working from home, trying to figure out how to do that, how to figure out Zoom and Teams and what have you, and how to make those work. And just wondering whether, you know, were construction sites going to continue? Was the supply chain, you know, put aside toilet paper, but were construction sites going to be able to get plywood delivered to them? So, but, you know, lo and behold, you know, several weeks after the lockdown, and even during those first few weeks, we were hearing from clients. And just to go back, John and I, those first few weeks, we hit the phones hard and, you know, called the majority of our clients, subscribers, just to get a sense of what they were thinking and what they were feeling. And, you know, the result was, you know, the majority of the people figured, you know what, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. We're going to get through this. It takes forever to get a project approved anywhere in Metro Vancouver anyway. So we're just going to keep pressing ahead, you know, and those developers who had projects that were in the market that were already actively marketing, they, you know, impressively did a very quick pivot, got into the virtual tours by, you know, videotaping their, I feel like an old fart saying videotaping, but, you know, recording tours of their sales centers and presentation centers and display suites and, you know, conducting virtual tours that way. So everybody adjusted really, really quickly. And I've chatted with some people from the construction sector too, who, you know, those first couple of weeks, they basically just put their heads down and they'll say, how are we going to do this? How are we going to make this work? And within a few days had, you know, hand washing stations, had protocols posted all over the construction sites so that, you know, people were social distancing and washing hands and doing all the stuff that you were supposed to do. So, you know, so even during those first few weeks, we were hearing that people were still registering for websites. They were still calling for appointments to see if they could come in. Obviously, it was more difficult to write deals, so we didn't see as many deals being written. But there were still some deals being written even in those first 2-3 weeks of the lockdown last year in late March and early April.
Wow. And did, what about the kind of moving past the straight up lockdown the couple months there? Like, we've been asking a lot of people this question, but did the remainder of 2020 surprise you in terms of activity? I think it's basically, I think the answer seems to be yes across the board, but what was your guys' take on it?
Yep. You know, our take was, you know, obviously impressed with, you know, the second half of the market and how, you know, the buyers responded to the market. And, you know, what was kind of becoming apparent and clear over time, especially in the summer moving into the fall, was that, you know, because of these lockdown measures and because, you know, a lot of, you know, organizations in the business community, you know, trying to operate, you know, without being in a office environment as much so, had to pivot into that working remotely, using technology phase, which really put the emphasis on the home, you know, making sure the home is first and foremost. So, you know, we immediately saw a spike in demand for the townhome sector of the market, and particularly in suburban locations. You know, rather than looking for locations that, you know, were more ideally located within close proximity to urban centers or quaint retail amenities, the primary focus of buyers in, you know, from the second quarter onward was, you know, what is the most affordable, spacious product I can afford? And kind of dedicating and carving out spaces that they could use for either Zoom or Teams calls, mm-hmm. or a individual office space. So, you know, we really saw instantly that shift for demand for space. So, you know, you know, the mantra of real estate is often location, location, location. And, you know, what the pandemic really accelerated was the, you know, at least in the short term, that desire for space. So it was kind of like space, affordability, you know, was kind of what was driving the market. So we started to really see that take off in the second half. And we're still seeing that today, but it's also trickling into other sectors. The condominium, wood frame and concrete sectors are starting to really heat up. But the first ones to heat up were the townhome and single family sectors of the market.
So can we talk maybe a little bit about that, John? Just thinking about how the market operates and how we've watched it over the years, but obviously detached and the half duplex and townhouse market has been very, very hot. A lot of people are predicting that the condo market will in many ways be playing catch up this year. And that's everything from kind of across the lower mainland, including downtown, which has been a market that I think of all the markets during COVID was kind of hit maybe the hardest. Can we talk maybe about the condo market and kind of where you see that going this year?
Yeah. You know, our take is, you know, we're tracking the market on a routine basis. So we're already seeing the condo market pick up. So it's not even a prediction as per se, it is an actual reality today that the condo market is picking up. You know, we're starting to see a lot of pre-sale activity in the concrete sector in locations like Burquitlam in Coquitlam and then also in Burnaby. So we've had a number of successful high-rise project launches occur in those markets. You know, about a year ago, even prior to the pandemic, a lot of developers were postponing their projects just because they felt that there wasn't enough demand that could absorb the product put to market at that time. They're now going ahead and trying to get to market as fast as possible because they're starting to see that demand is starting to pick up for those sectors. So I would agree with you that, you know, the downtown market has been, you know, initially has been most, you know, negatively impacted. I wouldn't say that we saw noticeable declines in prices. It's just that maybe the appreciation of units in the downtown core wasn't as significant as maybe a single family home in the suburban location like Langley or Abbotsford or that sort of thing.
Right.
But, you know, we still find that, you know, urban condos have held their values. It's just they haven't gone up as much so. So, you know, if you have a contrarian mindset and you think that, you know, over time, you know, as this, you know, schools open up in September, which I believe we've saw an article the other day suggesting that, in fact, schools are going to be opening, post-secondary right. institutions are going to be opening in September, you're going to start to see more congestion on the roads. You know, right now, you know, I live in Ladner and driving in and out to the city is a breeze. Congestion is very low right now. But you have to think that in September that, you know, congestion will pick up as people go back to work in a more frequent manner and schools open up as well. So, you know, I think once that happens, the desirability of living closer to the core will then improve at that point in time. So we do see the condo sector picking up and it's picking up right now as we speak. And it's also, it goes to affordability as well. If, you know, you're looking in the market for a new townhome and, you know, you just realize, look, I can't afford that price point, but you do want to get into the market, then the condominium is the next choice that you have. So, you know, based on the fact that prices of townhomes and single families have come up quite a bit over the past year, you know, people looking to get into the market today, that may be their only option at this point.
Right. And, you know, apart from price point, you guys are kind of in an interesting position because you have so many large developers, I guess large and small developers as clients, and you're speaking to kind of these guys on the ground day in and day out. One of the things that struck me is going back to what Michael was saying about, you know, it's not, the last year hasn't been location, location, location as much as size of unit and, you know, the space for the home office, the space where you can take a Zoom call and you don't have a kid running in, that type of thing. Is there a sense out there that, you know, everyone looking for that home office is that those days are numbered, or are you guys hearing in the industry that that's kind of the new normal?
You know, I don't necessarily, you know, it's a tough one to answer because I think there are still people who, because of what's happened over the last year, recognize the value of having that, that space, whether it's, you know, a tech nook where you can set up your laptop and have your Zoom or Teams calls, or if you're in a one-bedroom apartment with a partner who's also working from home, having that space where you can both separate, whether it's, you know, part of the amenity space within a condo building or a townhome building or a townhome complex that you're in, where you can go and work from for a period of time if you both have Zoom calls or what have you. You know, we don't think that the work from home thing is permanent. You know, I think as a lot of people are recognizing there are benefits and drawbacks to it. And we've experienced that ourselves, even within our own company, where, you know, I think people like the flexibility of being able to work from home one or two days a week, but they also, especially during those first few months of the pandemic, really missed that personal interaction with their fellow team members. So we did see, you know, and even today, even though we do have restrictions in the office in terms of how many people can come in on any given day, usually we're maxing out on the number of people who can come in. So there is that desire, and I think there is still going to be a need for people to go into the office and continue to work. So
Right. There's probably got to be a study done about people that have young kids or people that have significant others that are stuck at home needing an office space to hide, maybe.
Get out of the house. I think it's pretty specific, where you're at in your stage of life in terms of how effective it is working from home, that's for sure.
Yeah, but no, the collaboration point is a good one. So can we talk about who's driving demand?
Throughout the market, I would say it's your entry level and your move-up buyers were the primary drivers of the market through most of last year. You know, the downsizers, empty nesters, they were probably the slowest to sort of get back into the market, along with investors, I'll add. You know, and on the downsizer front, I think there was just more anxiety about, you know, going into a presentation center. But, you know, I think we're starting to see now that single family home prices have gone up so much, you know, that's probably getting a few of those buyers even off the fence and figuring out what their next steps are going to be as far as, you know, are they going to stay in the house or are they going to move into a condo building? Or downsize into a, you know, executive townhome, for instance. But, you know, on the investor front, it's been interesting because I think through most of probably three quarters of 2020, they were largely on the fence. You know, we kept hearing from our clients that they were inquiring, they were coming by and they were out there. But, you know, given the predictions that they heard last spring of price crashes by varying amounts, depending on who was putting out the prediction. You know, if somebody's predicting, especially a government entity is predicting that prices are going to drop by 9 to 18%, as an investor, why would you be jumping into the market? So I think they sat back and waited. But, you know, eventually after seeing consecutive month after month of MLS results showing that sales were up and prices were starting to go up again, that it was like, okay, maybe they got this one wrong. And we saw in the fourth quarter, in particular of 2020, where, you know, the investors started to come back into the market. They were very selective initially and they're still selective and very value oriented and value driven, but they are much more active today than they have been for probably the last 2 years.
Yeah. And the pandemic also proved that, you know, there is a lot, you know, significant amount of local end user demand. You know, the pandemic obviously makes it challenging for foreign buyers to come in and buy real estate when it's challenging to come in and cross our borders. So, you know, it just really showed that there is a strong contingent of local demand for our real estate here.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point, because I think with the government policies that were introduced in 2018 and that really impacted the market in 2019, like, okay, well, what are you going to do now?
Yeah. You know, well, that's what we've kind of been talking about a lot on the show, right? It's the narratives have around skyrocketing real estate have kind of shifted a bit because it's pretty clear that there's no, you know, boogeyman from offshore that's having that great of an impact on what's going on here.
Yeah, agreed. Now, you know, one of the points we made at the UDI presentation was, you know, the demand is incredibly strong today. It's all domestically driven for the most part. You know, we still did see some immigration coming in last year, but a fraction of what we normally see. But, you know, if you think the market is crazy now, imagine if we had that immigration happening and we had that demand from new immigrants. And I'm not just talking the high income and high net worth immigrants that come in, but we also do have a lot of non-high net worth immigrants that come into the country that are looking for opportunity and a better life. And, you know, what we found is a lot of those immigrants, they'll rent for the first little while, but their ultimate desire is to own. Mm-hmm. So as soon as they are able to get into the market, they, you know, they do. And so once that demand comes back again, you know, are we going to be prepared for it? And if not, what happens to pricing then?
Right. And I guess, well, there's a few things to unpack there, I think, for sure. But one thing we want to talk to you guys about was rents and what happened to rents in 2020 and what you guys are thinking is going to happen this year. But presumably, at least in our business, when we were talking to investors over the past year, a lot of that fear was, you know, rents are down. It's going to be hard to place a tenant. Government policy changes to protect tenants, which I think were largely seen as a positive thing. But all those things combined made the environment a little bit sketchy for investors. Can you talk about what we saw in rents in terms of vacancy rates, in terms of the amounts people were getting for rents, and what you see moving forward this year with presumably a little bit of a bounce back?
Yep. So yeah, the rental market is typically, just to kind of give more context to Metro Vancouver, is typically historically been one of the strongest, you know, rental markets in, if not North America, and all of the world, as it relates to vacancy rates. We traditionally have a, you know, 1% or lower vacancy rate across Metro Vancouver, and fundamentally a lack of housing options for people, just based on the fact that, you know, a lot of people continue to move here, and we, you know, we don't have enough rental stock to support the demand for it. So that's one thing to note. We also just want to, you know, we track the newer purpose-built rental market. So, you know, any statistics that we come up with are purely for newer apartment buildings, so not old rental stock.
Right.
And, you know, we didn't know what to expect. You know, we typically feel that, you know, the rental market is more so resilient than a housing market, but we're actually surprised in the fact that, you know, we didn't anticipate that the pandemic would ultimately impact lower income earners and the rental market the most, from the perspective that a lot of our rental market is supported by post-secondary institutions and international students who travel here, and they will rent in urban areas near either downtown or near UBC, SFU, other post-secondary institutions. And a lot of the rental market does rely on those renters. And as soon as you say to students that, number one, we're not opening the borders for travel, and we're having online classes, no in-person classes, the motivation to want to rent in locations like downtown or UBC are quite diminished. So, you know, we have a lot of students in first, second year university who would have gone to classes and lived on campus are basically living with their parents. So in the short term, it's resulted in some, you know, would-be renters pulling back from the market, and not as much international renters. So we did see quite a bit of a spike in places like UBC, where we would traditionally have next to zero vacancy. And then in downtown Vancouver, there was a spike in vacancy. So those were the key locations where we did see a spike in vacancy. But overall, there were other, you know, suburban and other locations within Metro Vancouver that weren't as negatively impacted by the pandemic. In terms of rents...
Sorry, John, can you just... Yeah. In terms of... So, you know, we often throw around like a 1% vacancy rate or even lower than that... Do you guys have numbers on what that spike actually translated to in terms of vacancy rate?
We could probably look into it. I mean, we track the newer purpose-built rental market. So, right. So, you know, in those locations, it spiked up as high as 5 to 10%, like a UBC, in downtown, maybe 5%, 5 to 10% range. But other locations like Surrey, Langley, you know, even the Tri-Cities, we didn't see that type of spike in vacancy. They were still below 5% for newer purpose-built rental buildings.
Right.
So that was kind of an interesting observation that we noticed. But, you know, the way we see it is that this is just a short-term thing. You know, we've been tracking the market for the newer purpose-built rental market for over 5 years now. And prior to the pandemic, you know, you would have a rental stock at UBC of over 3,000 units per se, and you would check the statistics and you'd see no vacancies. So, you know, with the announcement that schools are going to be reopening in September, I have no reason to believe that those vacant units will be absorbed come September.
Yeah, I was just going to jump in on the vacancy data. So if you're just looking at the buildings we track that have already gone through their initial lease up campaign, so we refer to those as sort of fully leased. And so now they're just dealing with the turnovers of tenants that give notice, and then they're filling those units back up again. So, you know, in the first quarter of 2020, that we call it an availability rate, there was like 2.3% of the units that we track were available. And in Q4, it was 4.2%. So it went up by a couple of percent for those buildings that we track, which is in line with, you know, with what CMHC saw as well, where with their most recent rental market, where, you know, they look at the entire market. So their vacancy rate went from 1.1% in 2019 to 2.6% in 2020. So still ridiculously low when you consider it. You know, I think Calgary's vacancy rate was 6.6% at the end of last year when CMHC did their survey there. So it obviously did impact vacancy, but, you know, across the board, not by as much. It was really, as John referenced, you know, those areas that were, you know, downtown Vancouver, any other areas that sort of service post-secondary institutions.
And presumably with the vacancy rate, as goes the vacancy rate, goes how much rent people are paying. Do you have any data on the impact on rents and where we're kind of headed here?
Go ahead, John.
Okay. Yeah. So what's interesting that we've been finding with the newer purpose-built rental market is that, you know, there's a lot of other things to consider when it comes to leasing up a building. So, you know, with the government stating that, you know, you aren't able to increase the rents for a certain period of time, you know, that's noted by developers of new rental buildings. So, you know, what we're finding is that a developer would be less motivated to want to rent something for a lower rent and would be more incentivized to have a higher face rent and offer 1, 2, or even 3 months worth of free rent, so long as the contract rent or face rent is at a certain level,
right,
which is higher than what they would otherwise have to rent it out for on the market. So, so what we're seeing with new buildings that have rental buildings that have been completed and released to the market throughout 2020 in the pandemic is that the rent themselves for those buildings are actually not any lower than what they would have been. It's just that landlord developer is just being more amenable to a slower absorption period. So, you know, leading up to the pandemic, when the market, especially the rental market, was in very, very high demand, you would see a building that would have 100 to 200 units be leased up within less than 3 months. So, you know, extremely high absorption rate. Whereas now you're seeing that, you know, a similar building in a similar neighborhood, you know, leasing at 5 units a month, but the rents are still just as high as, if not higher than what they were before. So they're sacrificing absorptions for rental rates at this point. And, you know, the motivation, you know, who's to say what it is, but it could be a function of those government measures that are put in place with regards to rental rate increases. So that's something we're seeing in the market. Where there are some declines in rental rates is in that investor-owned condominium sector of the market, where you have an individual owner of a property where, you know, they just don't have the capacity to sit on a unit for 3-4 months, so, and they want it rented out immediately. So they would be more willing to negotiate a lower rent than they would have otherwise wanted prior to the pandemic starting.
Right, right. Okay. So in thinking about the market kind of moving forward here for the balance of 2021, what are your thoughts on the market in general? And where do you think we're heading here over the next maybe 1 to 3 years?
You know, I think we're already starting to see signs of what the rest of the year is going to look like with respect to, you know, townhome product is still selling incredibly well. The demand remains extremely high. You know, prices have started to inch up, and I think, and not even inch up in some cases, there's some pretty significant price increases happening in some places in the Fraser Valley. So, you know, as that happens, you know, while demand was reasonably strong for, you know, low rise condos last year, I think, you know, we saw an increase of 23% in that sector year over year. But, you know, compare that to the townhome sector, which saw 177% increase in sales from, you know, 2020 to 2019.
That's crazy.
So I think as that spread, you know, as townhome prices start to increase, and we've seen this before, you know, during a bit of a downturn, you know, townhome prices compress a little bit, get a little closer to wood frame, people jump into that sector. As the supply gets absorbed, prices start to increase and that spread kind of gets reestablished again between the low-rise condo and the townhome product, and even high-rise condo for that matter. And then you start to see people going back to the condo product again. So I think, you know, we're going to see a much more balanced demand for product across the region. But I think the biggest jump that we're going to see is for demand in the high-rise sector, which we're already starting to see, mostly due to, you know, investors coming back into the market again.
Do you guys have any thoughts on pricing? And one thing just to note here, like we talked to Cameron McNeil and Ryan Lalonde from MLA last week, and they had some pretty specific numbers in terms of price appreciation over the next year, year and a half. And like they're extremely bullish on the market in terms of new construction. Is that your guys' sense?
Yeah, you know, I think this year, and I'll, you know, John can offer his opinion as well. I think this year prices will probably see some appreciation, but I think there's so many new projects that are, you know, that were put on hold
right
through 2019 and most of 2020 that are going to be coming onto the market. So I think there is going to be a lot of new supply coming into the market. I think where I see, you know, more significant appreciation happening is into 2022 when the borders reopen, we start to see that immigration coming back in, we have that pent up demand from that immigration coming in, and the pace of approvals in Vancouver, is everybody is aware, you know, in the industry and hopefully even outside the industry, people are becoming more aware of it. But, you know, that slow pace of approvals is really going to hamper any new supply coming into the marketplace. So that's where I see there being, you know, a bit of a crunch where we're going to see some pretty substantial upward pressure on pricing in 2022 and beyond.
Right. Actually, and that lines up almost exactly with what Ryan and Cameron were saying, that the next 6 months were in their minds an opportunity, whereas by about mid 2022 we're in a different category in terms of pricing.
Yeah, well, not to tell secrets, but they do subscribe to NHS Live. Yeah.
So it sounds like you guys are cautiously bullish on the next couple of years. What challenges lie ahead in your guys' minds?
Yeah, that's
a good question. You know,
I'll leave you to answer the tough one.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? Yeah. Sometimes, you know, we just don't know what's going to happen with, you know, our hope and our anticipation is that, you know, we're going to be continuing to, you know, have more of a normalcy environment with regards to getting past the pandemic in late 2021 and beyond. So, you know, the only concern that I would have is for whatever reason, you know, this didn't occur. And, you know, we had a prolonged kind of process that we had to drag through and not let new immigration come to kind of help fuel the market. So I think that's one thing that could possibly happen. Another thing is, you know, real estate markets, as you guys know, they do, they are cyclical. And, you know, from our perspective, you know, they're cyclical and they go up and down, but in the long term, the trend is up. But, you know, that's not to say that in short term periods, they do come down if they're overheated or overhyped. So, I mean, my only consideration would be just, you know, looking at what's going on in the single family market right now and just how much hype is being put into it with regards to sales that are occurring significantly above list pricing. You know, it does create that sense of fear of missing out in the market, which could potentially, you know, attract the wrong type of people, you know, people who are looking to make money quick by flipping the home or that sort of thing. And then also, yeah, people who maybe are stretching themselves a little too thin in order to get that single family home because they feel like their fear of missing out, because, you know, human nature, if you hear experts saying things are going to double in a certain amount of years, and of course you're going to want to get in as soon as possible. So that would be the only concern I have, is just the single family market, people, you know, getting really, really heated too quickly and, you know, attracting the wrong type of people and seeing where that leads. So those are kind of the only two things that kind of come up to me top of mind. I think in general, you know, it's the same old adage with Vancouver. We just don't have enough supply, and there's the assumption that people are going to continue to move here and want to live here. So all the fundamentals are always good. It's just the short-term kind of issues that we're looking at are potential areas of concern.
Yeah, and I would add to that, I think just, you know, on the government policy side, the market does become active. We start to see some sharp increases in prices and we end up in that same sort of frenzied state that we were in 2016-2017, is, you know, can the various levels of government resist putting even more layers of demand-oriented policies in place? And, you know, so far they've refused to acknowledge that supply is an issue. I just hope at some point they recognize that, you know, especially given what's happened this past year with the domestic side of the market really driving the demand, that, hey, maybe supply does have something to do with it, especially on the rental side, but even on the, you know, the ownership side. So I think that's a big concern if we don't find some way to get more projects approved more quickly. The other one is just, you know, this continuing layering of costs onto the industry. And I think it's something that that we have to look at. I had a conversation leading up to the UDI presentation with Eric Carlson, and as you guys know, you've chatted with him before, he's pretty entertaining, but he's like, you know, just almost out of exasperation, he's like, can we go more than 3 years without having a new building code introduced that, right, you know, everybody has to learn and get trained on? I mean, we already have a challenge with skilled labor in the trade sector. So, you know, if you're forcing those trades to learn a new code every 3 years, it just becomes impossible to keep up and to supply the market with sufficient labor to execute on all these projects.
Yeah, I mean, just as a thought, came out of the conversation last week, but it's interesting to think that there's potentially more demand side measures coming, because considering, you know, the market we're in right now and how few projects launched over the last couple of years, it seems like, you know, that's a terrible idea. It's like, clearly it seems like the policies were ill-considered in the first place, and to layer on more challenges in terms of limiting demand, it seems like a bad idea to me.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
Do we want to, maybe just to shift gears a little bit, which areas in the lower mainland are you kind of maybe most excited about right now? And I mean that from kind of a growth perspective, or perhaps even an opportunity perspective.
Mike, you want to go first, John? Or?
No, you go first.
Sure. So I'm going to go to sort of two extremes of the market. First, I'm going to say, you know, I'm keeping kind of a close eye on Mission, and only because, you know, one of the region's biggest developers, Polygon, is starting a massive new community out there that I think, you know, once built out, will have, I think, up to 15,000 residents, I believe. So, you know, that's an interesting one to see, you know, whether that, you know, moving away from the core trend will continue, you know, and there's a lot of smart minds over over at Polygon. So, you know, I'm sure they saw an opportunity there and anticipate that that there will be good demand for a new master plan community that they're planning out there. You know, the other one that I'm looking interestingly at that I think there are some opportunities is downtown. And, you know, whenever you see a sector of the market that has been, you know, down for as long as it has, and again, the downturn in downtown, like in most parts of Metro Vancouver, but it was felt most downtown, was a policy-induced downturn. So, you know, despite those policies still being in place, I think people will see downtown as being attractive. And you know, I'm not one to sort of tell people where opportunities are. And, you know, downtown is still expensive, but I think there are opportunities there when you look at some of the pricing for condominiums there relative to what they were a few years ago. You know, when you consider, you know, how much or how little new products has been added to the market there, you know, as the market for condos starts to, you know, continues to pick up pace, I can see, you know, a lot of that product in the resale market that's existing now getting absorbed. And then you're going to be at a point where there's no new product coming to the market, very little resale product. So, you know, eventually that's going to put some increased prices on, or increased pressure on pricing.
Yeah. And just to add a kind of more, not as much geographic in terms of a municipality, but there's some key large projects that are quite interesting to see in terms of the build out. One was Concerts Harborside Waterfront in North Vancouver. And I don't know exactly how long this one's been in planning, but it feels like at least a decade. So, you know, I just love to see projects that have been grinding it out and kind of trying to make it work finally come to market. And I wonder if they'll have to change their specifications for the project based on what they originally thought they would have to put in it, because it's 10 years ago is plus is when they had the property acquired. But I'm really excited to see how that shapes up. And I think that one will be coming to market hopefully in 2021. So that's, you know, I don't know necessarily in terms of, you know, an investment or so, more so as a place to live as an end user. Excited about that project. And then just going south of the Fraser, another master plan community, which was another long approvals process, was the Spetifor lands in Tawasin, which drove by the site a few days ago, and it's looking great. And it's called Southlands, and really cool architectural single-family townhome product in that location. And that's a big project, and excited to see that one get built out as well, too. So North Vancouver and Tawasin.
Oh, that's great. And can we talk maybe about just BC, the province in general? Do you have any regions you're excited about?
I'm from the Okanagan, so I'm going to say that's one I'm excited about. And you know, I'm from the southern part of the valley, but from, you know, chatting with various people in the market, you know, Kelowna just sounds like it's on fire. And you know, the downtown is transforming there. With, you know, before you used to drive in and you'd see one tower or two towers, and you know, based on the number of projects that are in planning there, it's going to look like a mini metro town not too far down the road.
Right. And I know you guys are in Edmonton and Calgary too. Obviously, those markets have had a couple challenging years, to put it mildly. What do you see for the future of Alberta? And are you excited about Calgary and Edmonton?
Yeah, we're pretty bullish on the future of those cities. You know, largely a function of when, you know, we're going to start to see a lot of immigration come to Canada, and with the end goal of owning a home as an aspiration for new immigrants. You know, looking at your options in terms of what's out there, and Metro Vancouver is obviously a desirable city, but, you know, as time goes on, is becoming harder to obtain in terms of a single family home or a more family oriented product. You know, we're hearing the single family market across all Canadian cities is increasing, from Toronto to Ottawa. You know, we heard there's an article put out a week ago saying that the average house price in Ottawa was over $750,000. So even markets like Ottawa are starting to heat up on the single family front. So, you know, if your end goal is to own a single family home and you're moving to Canada, you know, Edmonton and Calgary are relatively some of the most affordable cities that we have at this point. And, you know, even to Calgary's credit, you know, it's a very lively city. You know, got a lot of young energy, and they're starting to diversify away from, you know, the oil and gas slowly but surely sectors. And people are starting to recognize that through purchasing homes in that market right now. So,
right. Yeah, Calgary is an incredibly beautiful city. It's
it's been sort of shocking how long it's been down too.
Like, right.
I'm surprised, because it is. It's a great city, and there's a lot of energy there, and there's a lot of infrastructure. Like, it seems like, you know, it ranks, I think, in the top 10 cities on some of those
on Matt's livable list.
On my livable list, at least, especially if you like driving.
Right.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, you know, it's when the downturn happened there in 2014, and we had just gone into that market a couple of years prior. You know, we thought, oh, you know, Calgary always bounces back, so we're just going to stick it out. And, you know, we waited for the government change, the oil industry, you know, still being in the tank. You know, things didn't improve all that much. And then, of course, you had the pandemic, which was, you know, another nail in the coffin. But, you know, I think the positive thing with the length of the downturn that they've experienced is that they're finally taking the need to diversify their economy much more seriously. So,
right.
You know, we're starting to see, and it's a no-brainer there for the tech sector. You've got, you know, a young, educated workforce, and we are starting to see, you know, some progress on that front, and seeing some new industries moving into, new businesses moving into that market.
Right. Well, maybe we'll leave it there, but we do have this segment called the Five Wire, five quick questions about Vancouver and your lived experience here. So can you stick around for that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, so question number one, we'll start maybe with John. What is your favorite neighborhood in Vancouver?
I'm going to have to say Ladner, my hometown. Not my hometown, but I moved to Ladner about a year and a half ago and I've been enjoying it. So that is that's my current favorite neighborhood in Vancouver.
Good one. And Michael?
Being a European descent, I still love Commercial Drive, love going down there for a Saturday or Sunday brunch. But I think I mentioned this the last time I was on the show. I think, you know, Lower Lonsdale, you know, should be a model for urban planning in terms of what the city of North Van has done there. With it's really become a destination, you know, not just for people from North Vancouver, but, you know, from people from all over. So, and if anybody hasn't been there yet, recently, they should go and check it out because it's pretty, even during the pandemic, you know, what they did with the covered ice rink there, and, you know, they didn't put the ice in this year, but they still made it so that people could go down there and hang out with their family, their household members, obviously. But, you know, even during the pandemic, there was still this sense of life there, which was really great.
Favorite bar or restaurant? We're thinking pre-pandemic when you guys were out and about on the town.
I'm getting too old to be out and about on the town. you know, I'm sticking with my fave because it's still our go-to even when we were restricted to takeout only. Tavola, which is just down on Robson Street, just west of Denman. Fabulous place. And just, you know, even with the more limited seating, still a great vibe in there and unbelievable food.
That's a great one. Yeah. John?
Yeah. So I think last time I said Bob Likes Thai Food, which is a chain. I'm going to switch it up this time and suggest a restaurant called Il Posto, which is in downtown Ladner, which is a locally owned Italian restaurant. And it's probably I would argue is the best restaurant in Ladner. So I would recommend you checking that out if you ever were in that part of Metro Vancouver.
Right on. One book you would recommend. I'm trying to remember what answers you guys had last time, but you would recommend everyone read.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah. So I read, mostly business related books. They're kind of my favorite books. One of the latest ones that I read that I would recommend was a book by Mark Randolph, who was the co-founder of Netflix. And the book was called That Will Never Work. So I just enjoyed the book because, you know, obviously Netflix being such a big company, you know, just to hear about the small beginnings of how it all started and just kind of knowing that, you know, big things can come from small beginnings is kind of a fun and an inspiring read. So I'd recommend that book for sure.
Yeah, right on. It's a good one. Michael?
Yeah. And I'm a big memoir guy. I like, you know, hearing, you know, similar to the book that that John recommended, but I like hearing people's sort of story and how they got to where they were. So on the business front, I would recommend Chip Wilson's Story of Lululemon book. And, you know, it's fun because, you know, you're from Vancouver and you know all the places that he's talking about. But, you know, he goes back to his start even with West Beach when he started that up and such. So that was a great one. And then for a lighter read, I'm going to give you two. I'm going to cheat. I'm going to suggest Green Lights by Matthew McConaughey, which is a really, if you have an Audible subscription, it's a super fun read because he actually reads it himself. So you can just imagine with his drawl how entertaining that is. So
I started it, but I was having a tough time with the Matthew McConaughey part. Too much Matthew McConaughey.
You're just
going
back to a Lincoln ad.
It was, yeah, exactly. No kidding. But I might have to pick that one back up. That's.
I'd recommend you give it another shot. If there's some laugh out loud moments in that one. So
it's like listening to Jeff Spicoli for an hour.
Wasn't he the one, Matthew McConaughey wasn't he arrested or something for playing bongos and smoking weed back in the, like that was a,
anyway. Yeah, he tells that story in the book.
Oh, right on. Nice. Okay. It was a Chip Wilson one. I feel like
that sounds great.
Yeah. Just from reading articles of his, like he reminds me almost of a Conrad Black type guy in terms of his very opinionated, right? I'd imagine it's probably pretty entertaining that way.
Yeah. I have to say, you know, full disclosure, I enjoyed the first half of the book much more than the second half. The second half of the book, he gets into that more sort of opinionated part of it with respect to what was happening at Lululemon, you know, once they got bought out and the various, leaders that that were running the company and such. So, but, you know, I think the first half, two thirds of the book, you know, is what I really enjoyed. The whole book is good to read or listen to, whichever you do. But I did find sort of the, you know, the growth of the company and how they got to where they were, you know, from basically nothing to this massive global company. So it was pretty fascinating.
Right. I'm putting it on my Audible as we speak here. This is
skip the part where there's axes to be ground.
And next question, one piece of advice that you'd give your 18-year-old self. Maybe we'll start with John.
Yeah, I think the last time was just buy real estate as early as you can, because you'll be 35 in no time. I'll stick with that one.
Or 45.
I was going to say in Matt's case. it goes quick. And Michael?
I would say you're capable of more than you think you are.
Good one. And last but not least, something you have purchased for under $1,500 that's changed your life in the past few years, starting with Michael.
I don't know if they've changed my life, but I bought a really good pair of hiking boots. I you know, bit the bullet and spent over $400 on a pair of good waterproof hiking boots. Living on the North Shore, you got the mountains in your backyard, so that's really got me out and been doing some hikes and such that I might not have done otherwise. So.
I feel like that's we've had a couple of those lately where it seems not necessarily COVID inspired, but it seems related somehow. But that's a good one. And John?
Yeah, so I have probably, I mean, not life changing, but just life improving to a great extent for me. When I moved into my new home, you know, the first thing I wanted to do is get a new kind of home gym set up. So bench press, squat rack, just everything that I could so that I could do a home workout. And it was super easy to get all of the equipment I needed and weights I needed online. And apparently, this is all pre-pandemic, and apparently during the pandemic, it was the hottest commodity around. So I've talked to people who said, you know, I had to wait months and months to get just a basic weight during the pandemic. So yeah, that definitely for me, it was huge, just being able to, you know, get in a quick workout without having to kind of go to a, you know, a gym or community center. That was huge. The other one is just not too much of a plug, but just an Audible membership. So, you know, just using that time on the road to, you know, listen to as many audiobooks as possible has been a huge kind of game changer for me in terms of, you know, making more beneficial use of my free time. So, for sure. You know, went from not reading a whole lot to, you know, in the year and a half reading 50, 60 books just throughout commuting, you know, is a huge improvement to my life.
That's a great one. Yeah.
Although it's still the verdict's out whether you're actually reading those books, John.
Well, that's somebody. Yeah. Somebody challenged me on that the other day. I said I read 50 books a year. And they said, well, you kind of listen to them. But
yeah, that's a fair point.
But John, there's probably an opportunity to flip some of those weights.
I thought that's where you're going with that, a buy low, sell high strategy.
You know what? I probably could flip those weights for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Well, how can our listeners find out more about Urban Analytics and what you guys are up to?
Well, we just early in the new year, we just launched our new corporate website. So go and check it out at urbananalytics.ca. All of our contact information is there, and a bunch of great stuff that will let you in on what we do.
Right on. Well, thanks so much again for your time, guys. It's good to have the annual State of the Union with you, and hopefully we'll have you back soon. And thanks so much for your time.
Always enjoy it.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with Michael Ferreira and John Benest from Urban Analytics.
Always enjoy having John and Michael on the program. These guys are becoming kind of a, you know, we have our at least annual check-in with them, but over the course of the last 5 years, Michael's been on a number of times. John, this is his, he's part of the two-timer club
the
now.
The two-timer club, yeah, there's a couple of people in that club.
Yeah.
No, it was
That's
great.
The bronze jacket.
It was great having these guys on. And yeah, it's always, I think it's almost becoming an annual tradition to check in after their State of the Union at UDI.
Well, it's a perfect time, yeah.
Yeah, and it's great. We do have the slides. If you guys want the slides, we're going to have those on our website, VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is, of course, the slide package that they used during their presentation. A lot of emojis in there, which
there
I
were,
like.
Yeah, there were there's quite a lot
of
emojis.
There's a lot of stats, a lot of data, a lot of emojis.
I think that's probably becoming a thing for those guys is they always have last time they were on, too, the emojis were everywhere.
Yeah, I think it's a trademark Michael Ferreira move to have those emojis in his presentation.
That's a good thing to do.
I like it. Yeah. So if you want to check that out, VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. What else do we have?
We'll have it at the / eggplant. I'm just kidding. It was a lot of backslash poop emoji. We will actually try and have that on the site.
That's
and then
right.
also, if you want to follow those guys, just head over to their website as well. It's a good follow. The information that they're putting out is fantastic.
Or not.
And they do
Alberta as well. They have Edmonton, Calgary. So if you're interested in kind of Western Canadian real estate, they're always a great group to follow for sure.
For sure.
What else do we have before we cut for the day, Adam? VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate live. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com where you can sign up for things like the Livewire. This is our weekly mailer.
Yep.
You're getting stats before anyone else. You're getting stats that no one else gets.
Right.
Submarkets. It's really incredible. We got Deal of the Month, past episodes. There's no reason why you don't want to be on this list.
No.
We also have buttons there where you can sign up for the sold plan. This is start on launch date. This is how to get your property ready for market. We got
it's
the listing incentive.
For sure.
That's VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. We also have tried and true private client services.
Because Matt, if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information at your fingertips. It's free. It's the best way to look for real estate in Vancouver. All of our clients use it. We use it. And it's just got a facelift.
It is.
And I got to say, I actually just started using it. The new version, the Exposure.
It's called Exposure.
Exposure, yeah.
Right. I don't even know if it's called private client services anymore.
Well, to me, it's always called PCS, but it's maybe PCS Exposure. I'm not sure. We should probably check with them because we're going
to
be in a lawsuit.
The entire podcast.
Yeah, exactly. anyways, it is a great research tool. I'm actually finding new ways to use that tool every single day.
Well, they've added a lot of new features, which is super exciting.
A lot of new features. I'm really excited. Matt, but finally, before we cut for the day, how can people get in touch with you?
Well, if you want to talk about anything real estate related at all, give me a shout, 778-847-2854 or matt@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And you, Adam?
778-866-4574 or adam@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
We also have that secret line, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Hope you guys are all staying safe, and we'll talk to you next week.
Take care.
2,000 Faces for Radio.
Subscribe today.